The Nature Stories podcast, where people and place intersect.
The bike is fighting up the steep logging road in the Sinforosa Canyon of the Sierra Madre. It's raining and the trail is rutted and swampy. With each new twist, I catch a glimpse of the canyon floor 6,000 feet below me. Up until this week, the Tarahumara Indians had endured a decade-long drought. Now I'm forcing the motorcycle through mud, thick as potter's clay. I'm looking for a place called Choriachi. It's not on the map.
I'm Samantha Brown. Welcome back to the Nature Stories podcast, curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. This time, we travel by motorcycle into northern Mexico. This story comes from Stories from the Heart of the Land, a public radio series which considers the connection between people and the natural world. Here's series host Jay Allison.
This is the Sierra Madre in Mexico. Choriachi, James Spring was told, was a small village, one of the last places to find old-growth forest. For centuries, the Tarahumara villages here were isolated from the modern world, but logging has changed all that. A single acre of century-old pine trees can fetch $5,000 from a lumber mill, and much of the old growth is gone. Indian villages have banded together to try to stop the logging, but a new crop has appeared, one that pays a lot better than pine. James Spring heard that many of the Tarahumara were growing marijuana and opium. He decided to go see for himself, to revisit Mexico and, in a sense, his own past.
I'd been in the Sierra Madre before. I lived in Mexico when I was in my early 20s, and I owned an old red Jeep with no doors. I took that thing everywhere. I made camp with Mayan Indians in the forests of Guatemala. I lost myself in Yucatan's steamy jungles. I visited the vast caves where the silent Tarahumara lived much as they had for 1,000 years. It may not have built much of a resume, but this was the kind of experience that gave life meaning. When I talked to old high school friends who'd taken jobs at the phone company or the bank, they all sounded the same. They were giddy about 401ks, about stock options. I vowed to never sell out like that. I jumped into that red Jeep and I just kept driving south. But then one day, that road just sort of ended. It's dark now in the Sierra Madre and the rain is falling again. I see lights in a valley below. I've reached Baborigame. This place used to be a traditional Indian pueblo. Now it's a lumber mill town, a popular base of operations for people who come to exploit the Sierra's resources. It's pretty clear that most of us here don't hail from these parts. A few of the Mexican men are decked out in black Stetsons and fuchsia or gold-colored belts with matching boots. The style is called narco moda, literally drug fashions. Many of the Tarahumara villages now find themselves locked in a dangerous partnership with these people. More than a dozen Indian leaders have been assassinated for standing in the way of profits. Soon the sky opens and the rain is fierce, and I half wonder if God's chosen this night to drown out the wickedness of the village. Throughout the early 90s, I drove that old red Jeep through 4 civil wars and 2 engines. I finally abandoned it in Cabo San Lucas and found myself back in the United States. I got myself a real job with a desk and a telephone and a stapler. I gained 20 pounds. I took on a mortgage and then a second mortgage and a wife. And then one day a baby arrived, a girl. And from that wondrous and terrifying moment when fatherhood began, all that mattered to me was providing for her. I wondered if I hadn't cheated this little girl by saddling her with such a worn-out workhorse for a father. In our neighborhood in San Diego, there's a flock of green parrots, like the ones I used to see all the time in Mexico. Sometimes I wonder if they followed me here. Every weekday morning, I step into my driveway. And the parrot starts squawking like, "Buenos dias, desk jockey." I made the mistake of telling friends that parrots mocked me. Someone suggested I talk to somebody. Somebody professional-like. But someone else had another suggestion. I should buy a motorcycle. The next morning, the valley of Bogorigame smells like wet hay. Big trucks with flatbed trailers line the road beside the lumber mill. Timber is still big business, but it's pennies compared to the narco economy. Pine trees that were worth $5,000 an acre can be replaced with marijuana plants that'll fetch $120,000 an acre. A single acre of opium poppies is able to render heroin worth $500,000. For many Tarahumara farmers, the allure of the narco harvests is hard to resist. I've made my way to Colorados de la Virgen, a Tarahumara community that's fought to stop the logging. In a meadow next to a waterfall, I find an ancient church house and the terraced cornfield of an old Indian man who's worried that he's going to have another bad harvest. The water's failing us, he tells me. We used to plant corn on the day of St. Anthony. Now look, the day of St. John has already passed, and we still haven't seeded. Another Indian joins us. His name is Isidro Baldenegro Lopez. He's a respected Tarahumara leader who's battled against the logging interests for most of his life. His father did too, until he was assassinated. Isidro works for an organization called the Sierra Madre Alliance. They're the ones who told me about Choriachi, the sacred village where I'm headed. The three of us drink a fermented corn brew called Tesguino.
It tastes like a mix of lemonade, beer, and pine sol.
Afterward, Isidro leads me down a path to the old church. Across the meadow, I see a pickup truck, and I ask Isidro if the Indians here are planting marijuana.
No podemos decir que todos son narcotraficantes, ¿no?
I'm not going to say that everybody here is a narcotraficante, he says. But the fields are not so productive as they once were, 15 years without rain. He introduces me to a group of men. We drink more Tesguino. One thing leads to another.
I'm standing in a field of marijuana plants in the southern Sierra Madre, and this one happens to belong to a Tarahumara family, and it's about 2 months away from its harvest time. It's hidden from the road, but not by as much as you'd think.
The Tarahumara here, they're not wearing the drug fashions. They're just dressed like Indians. The field just seems like agriculture. They're trying to feed their families, trying to make a better life for their kids. And along this new path, the old way of life just kind of disappeared. Who was I to judge? Weren't these pretty much the same choices I'd made in my own life? I mean, at least these guys are earning cash to buy food and clothes. My paycheck goes to cell phone bills and TiVo and high-speed internet access. The last stretch to Choriachi is the toughest trail I've seen here. I'm pretty sure it was graded once, but the rains have washed away all good intentions. And just before sunset, I descend into a gentle alpine valley divided by a wide river. Even in the waning light, I can see that this place is special. It's stunning to behold, like the moment in The Wizard of Oz where everything turns to color. And it's quiet.
Choriachi is a very traditional community.
That's Daniela Ramirez, a young Berkeley-educated anthropologist who works for the Sierra Madre Alliance. She heads up a project with the Tarahumara here.
They believe that everything around them, all the plants and the animals, including the trees, have a soul. So instead of believing that they own this forest, they believe they're part of it. It's like their brother.
She tells me that many Indians believe that the Tarahumara themselves have caused the drought, and that they did it by selling the forest. There's no moon tonight, and the meadow would be black except for the glow of the fireflies.
I lie in my tent and I think about home. I switch on the flashlight and dig out the photo of my wife and our daughter Addie in the backyard. This is what I value now. A home that's safe. A refrigerator that's never empty. I value a vehicle that's rated well in crash tests. And I should switch to a PPO because the HMO sucks. I'm pretty sure that I would sell the trees. How many acres of my own old-growth forest had I already cleared? In the yellow light of morning, Daniela appears with a young Tarahumara boy, and they offer to take me on a hike to the other side of the valley. At one point, the path brings us to an abandoned cabin, and Daniela steps inside. An open window frames a wide view of the valley.
Outside this window, it's seems like miles and miles of just green, beautiful, huge trees. You can hear the sounds of the birds and a slight breeze. I feel peace when I look outside that window. But I also feel a little bit sad that that could be lost.
There's a lot of pressure on this village, I say. All the neighbors have sold out. But Daniela doesn't see it like that.
The people of Chiriachi, they don't need money to survive. They live in a traditional way. They live with the plants of the forest and what they grow.
She does agree that the long drought has been hard on everyone. The logging and the drug harvests may have saved more Indian lives than they've taken. If the Indians had been forced to live off corn and bean harvests during the last few years, they would have starved to death. Part of Daniela's work with the Sierra Madre Alliance is figuring out ways to keep the Tarahumara from having to leave the Sierra. Their lead strategy is called sustainable development.
Community projects like the collection and selling of pine nuts, sewing. They want to do sewing cooperatives. From the fruits, they want to make jams and sell the jams. But up to now, we haven't received any funding for not one of these projects.
If you got the funding, wouldn't that just really be another nail in the coffin anyway? Another death knell for the Tarahumara culture when suddenly they're forced to make Tarahumara strawberry jam?
I don't agree with the productive projects. I believe that those projects wouldn't work because the Tarahumara don't work in that way.
You can't get anything new and not have it impact what was old.
Right. They have tasted the modern life and they like it.
This is how it begins. How cash becomes itself like black tar heroin. How it makes you recognize all the things in the world that you don't yet have. And then very soon, you stop realizing all that you traded to get it. At the far end of the valley, we run into a Tarahumara woman in a cornfield. The field looks to be about 7 acres. If there's enough water this season for her to grow corn, and if there's no flooding, she might be able to harvest enough food to carry the family through much of the winter. I think about that little marijuana field. With about 1/10 the labor, this woman would be able to feed her family for the entire year. Someday soon, I think, she's going to realize it too. That night, I use the satellite phone to call home. "Hi, Addie," I say. "Hi, Daddy," she says. "Are you being a good girl for Mommy?" "Yeah." From where I stand, I could throw a rock into the middle of an opium poppy field. "We danced ballet," Addie says, "like this." And in my mind, I see her spinning, her arms above her head. I've been told the Indian village on the other side of the ridge is home to 300 widows and orphans, their fathers assassinated in disputes over timber and drugs. "We played," Addie says. "Brooke." "You played with your friend Brooke," I say. "Yeah." While we speak, heroin from the Sierra Madre is coursing into the U.S. "You come home?" Addie says. "I'll be home soon." "I love you," I say. "All of you," she says. And I hear my wife coaching. See you soon. When the call ends, I look into the night sky. So many stars, and I can't find a single one I recognize anymore.
James Spring, outside his tent in Churiachi, Mexico. The Sierra Madre Alliance, the organization that told Spring about the village, recently announced that a Mexican judge ruled that companies can expand logging operations into Churiachi. The Alliance is appealing the decision. James Spring is still working as a marketing director in San Diego.
That piece comes from our series Stories from the Heart of the Land, produced by Atlantic Public Media. Our music is composed and performed by Bill Frizzell. The Nature Stories podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you'd like more information on the series or the podcast, go to nature.org/stories. Next week, hear how one journey changed a man's entire worldview. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.